Okay, dial me up because you're going to be talking to Stanton Friedman in a moment, this hour on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Stanton Friedman with us this hour. We're going to take your phone calls as well. Stanton, some people believe, Ingo Swann, for example, when he did his remote viewing of the far side of the moon, that there were structures on the moon. If there are, do you think they were put there by us, maybe past civilizations, highly advanced civilizations, or ETs?
I would say ETs. In other words, I think there have been past civilizations on planet Earth. You know, our knowledge of our history is pretty darn short and compared to the 4.5 billion years the place has been around. And certainly the climate was quite appropriate for intelligent beings a long time ago. So that I think it's ETs. Again, that's where I differ with the SETI people. I think there are plenty of civilizations in the local neighborhood. We're the Johnny-come-latelys. You know, maybe we get destroyed ourselves. Maybe a comet or an asteroid hit the place. So who knows? But considering the age of the universe, you know, I don't think the way Bishop Usher did, that the world was created in 4004 B.C. on a Thursday afternoon at 2 o'clock. I think we've been around a very long time, and so I think there may be the backside of the moon is a perfectly good place to put a base. And I point out to people that, again, with the motherships, there's a place that you can't see from here easily, that you can communicate outward from without any interference from even your signals, George.
True.
So, you know, it's in my gray basket whether there are structures out there. If the government knows, they're not telling us. And who knows, maybe that's the reason that Apollo 18 and 19 were never flown. I mean, they were built, the astronauts were changed, everything was ready to go, or were trained, and everything was ready to go. And supposedly, we're saving money, according to President Nixon. It may be that somebody up there said, stay the heck away from our planet. I don't know.
That could be. Let's go to the phones. West of the Rockies, you're on with Stanton Friedman on Coast to Coast. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Oregon. How you doing, George?
Fine. Thank you. Go ahead.
Stanton, I have gone to a place up by Trout Lake, Washington, at least 10 or 12 times, and there's a certain type of UFO that I see up there all the time, and I'm wondering if you are familiar with it. The most exciting time, well, they're globe-like and colorful. Sometimes they're different colors. A lot of times they're white. They go really fast through the valley between Mount Adams and by Trout Lake. And one of them actually seemed to be communicating with us. James Gilliland, who has the ranch there, got out a very high-powered light and was, like, trying to signal it because it was hovering over us. And he made the shape of a triangle, and this thing, whatever it was, morphed into the shape of a triangle and then back into the shape of a circle, and it would zoom away, and then it would come back. Have you ever experienced anything like that? And if so, what do you think those are?
I haven't experienced. I've never seen a darn UFO. I'm sorry.
Oh.
People are disappointed.
Nor have I.
You know.
Nor have I.
But just because I haven't seen one doesn't mean they don't exist. I haven't seen Tokyo either, George, or Moscow. But they're around.
But they're there.
I've heard about James Gilliland stuff. I haven't been there. It's in my gray basket. Not enough data on my part to stand tall. I don't deny what you're saying, and it may very well be true. And I don't know what's going on. Look, if you got a whole mothership with dozens of little ones, they may be here, you know, graduate students doing their research on the development of a primitive society, or, you know, maybe their kids are having fun.
You're right. Well, that's a sure possibility. Well, thanks so much for taking my call.
Okay, Mona, appreciate you being part of Coast to Coast. Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello, how are you tonight?
Good, thank you so much.
How are you, Stan?
I'm great, even though it's the middle of the night here in Fredericton, New Brunswick.
Well, I am an abductee, and I have been followed by these UFOs all my whole entire life. And one of the questions I had was if you knew anything about whether the DNA between abductees have been tested against one another to see if there might be some kind of match. That's my first question.
Well, It's an interesting question. As far as I know, no, but that may be one of the things that the government has done in its activities along these lines. I don't know. You know, if we had talked DNA 60 years ago, somebody would have said, DNA, what? What are you talking about? You know, we're just, that's one of the areas of technology that I would expect aliens to be way more advanced than we are. I mean, if I had told you that you could take somebody's cigarette they'd been smoking and get enough stuff off it to identify the person, if I'd said that 60 years ago, you'd say I was crazy. Right. So what if we could do that now, what can these guys do?
Right.
So I don't know what's going on. I don't know whether several different civilizations have planted people here and see what happens. Who knows? I don't.
And my second question, actually, my second question just blew out of my head. I'm kind of nervous. My first time being on the radio. But if you guys want to see a UFO, I can guarantee you that as I move across the country, these things follow me everywhere I go.
Does it disturb you? I mean, do they bother you?
Well, what it is, I mean, I want to say something, but it's difficult for me to say it because, you know, everybody listens to this show. But I have seen the ball UFOs. I have seen the amber-colored ones, the ones that look kind of orange and as they change shape. I mean, I've seen the large black triangles. And I go from, you know, state to state. I travel a lot. And as I move from these different places, they come right to where I'm at. I mean, in the same neighborhoods that I'm in the same places that I go to, and it's just something that's haunted me my whole entire life. And I just wanted to know, that was my second question, is there any place where I can tell this information, give this information to somebody that could probably help me try to understand what it is myself?
Well, I don't know how much any of us know about what's really going on, but Hopkins Group in New York has certainly dealt with a lot of people who've been abducted. And, you know, I once talked to a Canadian abductee, a woman, and she'd had a meeting with somebody, and I had asked her, you know, have they given you any clue as to why you? And she said something to the effect that it just depends on who's easy to pick up,
right,
as if we were putting out a signal that makes it easy for them to check on us, you know, like transponders, and somebody waves a wand at the animal, and that tells you which animal it is. I don't know. And the people in New York, MUFON, headquartered in Bellevue, Colorado now, moved from Denver up. There are lots of people who are interested and who will listen to you and find out what's going on. And there are support groups around the country, too, for abductees, where you can talk to other people who've had similar experience. Because it's not easy to figure out what's going on. I mean, again, go back to the Americans and the American Indians and the explorers coming. You know, some wanted to convert them, some wanted to steal from them, some wanted to kill them, steal their women, steal their gold. Who knows? You need a lot of data before you can come to a conclusion about, you know, what all's going on. And I don't have the answer because my focus is sort of in the other direction. Is anything going on? Is the government telling us what it knows, which it obviously isn't? Can we get it more information, not only about Roswell, but about other crashes, about other events? One of the books that I'm connected with on my website, you'll see in the lecture appearances section that there are three books coming out this year, and one of them is a new view of the Betty and Barney Hill case by Kathleen Marden, who's Betty.
Why a new view, Stan?
Well, look, the event took place in 61. I mean, the
right
title is actually Captured, the Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience. I'm the co-author with Kathleen. It'll be out by August anyway.
Which is a great story, by the way. It's one of the best I've ever heard, ever.
Well, it's a great story. And Kathleen, because she's Betty's niece, Betty died a couple of years back. Kathleen has access to correspondence. A lot of stuff has never been published about the case. The big book was John Fuller's book, and the mid-1966, well, it's 40 years ago. So we need to look at it. And I also put more information about the star map work and the criticisms of the work and my criticisms of the criticisms, if you will. And I'm looking forward to that because hopefully it'll bring more people out of the closet. But there's a second book, which is much more ominous in a way, actually a third. The second one is Jesse Marcel Jr.'s book, Roswell, It Really Happened. That'll be out at festival time, and I'll be there in Roswell. Come on down, George. Have a ball.
Do you know the I met a fellow who heads up that for the city of Roswell, and he asked me to do a show there around the 4th of July. So I might do that.
I'll get in on the 4th and until the 8th anyway. And I was there for the 50th anniversary celebration.
You were the Grand Marshal in the parade, weren't you?
Yeah, I've done that. It's fun.
I remember that.
You wave at the kids and they wave back. That book will be out. But the third one is the one that makes you wonder. It's called, the latest title is Shoot Them Down by Frank Fascino Jr. And it's the summer of 52. That's not a romantic title. The title is probably Shoot Them Down because we've done a lot of digging. I wrote the foreword and the epilogue and helped Frank with some of the research. And in the summer of 52, the U.S. government gave orders to military interceptor pilots to shoot them down if they don't land when instructed to do so. Now, you can think of all kinds of cartoons, George. I know that.
Yes, you can.
But an ominous side of that is not only a statement from a general that we've scrambled hundreds of airplanes and haven't been able to do that, but I've heard at least 7 reports of interceptor planes that got, as the New York Times put it, disintegrated, disappeared in the summer of 52 and later. As a matter of fact, the head of the American Rocket Society, a guy named Farnsworth, wrote a letter to President Truman saying he didn't think that the approach of shooting them down was a good idea. You know, not very friendly, but the point is, how many more pilots, if I've heard of 7 cases, how many more pilots have never made it back that we haven't been told about?
Exactly.
That's why I use the word ominous. And, you know, people think, you mean the government could keep that secret? Nah, sure they could. There were 166 men and reconnaissance planes probing the Soviet Union, China, and North Korea back in the 40s, 50s, 60s mostly, who disappeared. And their families were all lied to until the year 2001. There's a book, By Any Means Necessary, by Mr. Burroughs, which is chilling in the fact that the families were all lied to. And that's scary stuff. Maybe that's one of the reasons they don't want to tell us what's going on.
You know. Next up, let's go to more callers here. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Mr. Friedman.
Yes.
Do you think the Bush administration's weaponization of space is to keep extraterrestrial vehicles from doing a reconnaissance of our planet?
I think that may be one of the reasons. You may remember President Reagan a long time ago saying he was going to share the Star Wars information with the Russians, who he had just called the evil empire. And so I think that may be one of the reasons, although, you know, I'm opposed to the weaponization of space. I worked in the space program. Lord knows we've got enough military spending and activity on this planet. Do we really need more? And, you know, the Chinese knocked down one of their satellites recently, and we did that 15 or 20 years ago, knocked down one of our own. That scares the heck out of me. Do we really have to be little kids playing games to attack each other? If the aliens wanted to destroy us, I'm sure they could have a long time ago, before we got, quote, smarter. You know? So I think that may be part of the picture. Somebody's made some decisions that we in a democracy have had no say in about how we interact. That's one of the things that bugs me here. You expect that in a dictatorship, but in a free and open society, I'm not against secrecy as required. I worked under security for 14 years, but I think we've overdone it when we say they're no threat to the security of the United States, and then we tell people not to talk about it, the military guys and others. there's a conflict here, and I think it needs to be resolved. I think we need some people on high who say, you know, it's about time to tell the public what's going on. Now, people ask me in that article that I mentioned, the UFO why questions on my website, www.stantonfriedman.com. One of the questions is, why don't they tell us what's going on? And one of the answers is a bunch of reasons, is that people in power would lose power. If we started acting like earthlings, what does that do to nationalism on this planet? That's a scary question, but, you know, couldn't we spend that $1 trillion that we're spending on things military now to feed the starving kids, treat the sick, and all those other nice things that we're not doing in much of the world? That's a deep question.
East of the Rockies, you're on with Stanton Friedman. Hi there.
Hello?
Yeah, hi. Go ahead, please.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
My name's Jason, and I'm a big fan. So it's the first time I've got a chance to get in touch with you.
Where are you calling from?
Florida.
I hope you escaped the weather out that way.
Yeah, thank God. My mother was down there on business. I'm not going to say who she works for, but she was down there on business for the state, and she left the day before all of that happened. So,
oh, my God. Lucky
her.
Really
good. The first thing I'd like to say is I'm an aerospace engineering student, and my question, I guess, to you and Mr. Friedman is really about what the government's involvement in all of this really is. Are these things, do you believe that we have reproduced craft, or are they watching us? And the reason I'm asking this, if you've got a second, I'll go ahead and tell you. I've seen one thing in my life. Me and my family back in 92, a few days after Christmas, came home late in the evening, and we seen right across our road, you know, maybe, 100 yards, maybe not even that far, looked like flashlights coming down from the top of the trees. And, you know, the first thing we thought is, you know, it was about that time of the year, and it was hunting season. We thought somebody was out there poaching. And, we watched it for a few minutes, and my father got like an uneasy feeling about it, and he said, everybody go inside. So we went inside and went to the far end of our house and looked out the, you know, we had a pretty good sized garden window at that end, and watched it a few more minutes. Well, all of a sudden, these two lights stopped. They stopped moving around. It looked like they were looking for something on the ground. And from the left came this big, all I can explain is like ball of red light right up from the left side, right up to where the lights were coming from the top of the trees, and then from the right, a bluish-green colored ball of light. The two lights that looked like they had been looking for something just cut off immediately, and I mean this huge, all I can explain, like spotlight, you know, shot straight down to the ground. The whole forest, I mean, you could see it like it was daytime. It was a really funky color. You could make an outline, you know, of something above the trees, of a craft of some sort, you know, of the same color, funny, like goldish white color. And then that was it. It was gone. And this thing was huge. I mean, we were, like I said, less than 100 yards from it. You didn't hear a thing. The reason I'm asking about government involvement is, you know, I personally don't believe in coincidence. And we lived, you know, like right in the flight path between Fort Rucker, Alabama, Kendall Air Force Base, and then the Naval Air Station over in Pensacola. So, you know, traffic was, you know, always great. I mean, it was nothing to look and see, you know, a battalion of Apaches fly over or, you know, Air Force.
Well, you know, we always got these reports of these huge triangular-shaped objects, Stanton, near Air Force bases, don't we?
Well, if you were an alien, wouldn't you want to keep track of what your buddies down below are doing to make sure that they don't take you out?
Absolutely. Stay with us. We'll be back with final phone calls with Stanton Friedman in just a moment. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Well, when you pick up the After Dark newsletter, you get 12 great issues, but you'll also get two old Art Bell interviews with the late Father Malachi Martin on possession and exorcism. So take advantage of it. You can get it by going to coasttocoastam.com. You click the yellow server, or you can call this toll-free number if you don't have a computer. That's 1-888-727-5505. And welcome back with Stanton Friedman. We'll take our final calls now. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
How's it going, George?
Good, sir. Thanks.
I was just calling because the events that guy just described with the the bright red light and the two smaller lights around it.
Mm-hmm.
That's right outside of my window right now.
It's right out your window? How big does it look?
It's no larger than like a regular star, but this thing is wavering. It's not steady. It's moving around. And the two other ones, it's like they come in and out of a fog. But it's definitely there, and it's putting off like a thumping frequency. I don't know. See if you can hear this. It's weird because it's over my radio. It's just like a steady thump. Let me see if I... Can you hear that?
Yeah, we hear that. Stan, did you hear that?
Yeah, I did.
What's
that? I don't know what that is, but, you know, radios are pretty sensitive to electromagnetic signals, so who knows what those guys are doing or whatever it is doing. I don't know. In my gray basket.
It was just kind of freaky because as I was on the phone, I heard the thump on the channel that I was listening to, and then I saw the red light appear, and I'm not sure what they are doing, but they are definitely to the east of me, and I'm in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. And
can other people see this thing?
Well, I'm at home alone right now, but I live out in the sticks.
I see. All right. But, do you have a camera? Take a picture for us.
Okay, I'll definitely do that.
Yeah, do that and get it to us. Send it to us, George at coasttocoastam.com. Stan, you never know.
You never know, indeed, especially after that other one you talked about from that Arkansas case.
Oh,
wow.
That is unbelievable. Let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, George. Hello, Stan.
Hi.
Hi. George, I wanted to ask you a question about something I saw on as I was watching the NASA Channel live feed on the computer one night. It was a return to flight 114.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a couple of years ago, and the boys were up on the space station, and they had just replaced a gyro about the size of a trash can, and they had taken the old gyro and were mounting it on its brackets in the tail end of the space shuttle. And I'm watching this live feed on the computer, getting ready to hit the record button. Out of the corner, be the bottom right hand side of the screen, I see a black looked like a black piece of dirt or something like that, and I thought, first thing, there must be some dirt in the lens of the camera or something
right.
That they've got up there. And of course, they had the Canada arm outstretched to the right hand side. And when I realized that this piece of black dirt was moving, not in front of the Canada arm as it would if it was in the camera lens, it moved behind the Canada arm, and then I hit the record button, but I was so staggered by what I was seeing that somehow I missed it and I didn't get it recorded. But this thing was, it looked to be about maybe a few thousand feet closer to the Earth than the shuttle. Of course, at the time the shuttle was flying tail first.
Mm-hmm.
The back of the shuttle was towards the Earth, the nose of the shuttle was away from the Earth, but it was tail first, okay? And this black thing was passing, was exceeding the speed of the space shuttle at the time, which I think was about 19,000. And it appeared to be maybe a few thousand feet closer to the surface than the space shuttle was. And the way the sun was directing at the time, this would have been perfectly lit, except the surface was black, and it was a triangular shape, and it was close enough to where, if it was any kind of a spacecraft or airplane or something like that, they would have been able to observe the space shuttle and the station at the time. But I was just wondering if anybody else saw that, or if I, you know, I mentioned this to a couple of people, and they look at me like I'm nuts, of course, but.
There have been some shuttle flights where in the background we have seen objects zoom by. Stan, haven't we seen some of those?
I've looked at just a couple of them. It's a whole special area because, as you know, there's an awful lot of footage out there, and trying to sort out the parts of this thing is not easy. And NASA has not been open about this. And I should comment, I get people saying, well, NASA's an open agency, right? They've sponsored loads of classified programs. I worked on some. The nuclear rocket program, our data was classified. So they apparently are under order, just like the FAA is, not to put out any useful information on flying saucers. And, you know, as I said before, you'd expect any visitors to the planet to have a rule sort of like make sure you can get home, which means you got to find out, standard approach, you got to find out what the other guy is doing and how he does it and what progress he's making and what signals he's sending out. You know, when you're being tracked on radar, for example, you know it because you've got a receiver that tells you, whoops, somebody's, you know, got us. So there's a whole world of this space shuttle, space encounters, if you will. And it ties back in with a question somebody else asked about weaponization of space. I don't know what's going on here, but the government sure isn't telling us about it. And we have stood by, again, if you had the Washington Post, the New York Times, the Chicago Tribune, all knocking on the door of the government, maybe we'd get somewhere, you know? That's why I talk about the cosmic Watergate. This is part of that picture. If you saw it, you've got to believe somebody at NASA saw it.
Absolutely. Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're up with Stanton Friedman. Hi there.
Hey, this is Jeremy from St. Pete. How you doing?
Fine, Jeremy. Thank you.
Great. Stanton, I'm a big fan.
Thank you.
I was just curious. I came on a little bit late, but had you heard about Dan Aykroyd saying that he had a new DVD coming out before next year that's supposed to have new photographs and exclusive video footage of the O'Hare incident?
No, I hadn't heard that, although I've done a show which never got broadcast with Dan. He was doing a series that got canceled before it made it out.
Right.
Got my picture taken with him. That's the one picture my kids always want. They don't care about me, yeah, but me and Dan, wow.
And this
you
was
and the
probably
Grays wasn't that great, huh?
What?
You and the Grays weren't that great of a photo, so they wanted the other one with Dan.
Yeah, sorry about that. I hadn't heard that. It wouldn't surprise me.
I'm sure David Cerrato's with him on this one again, huh, Stanton?
Yeah, I'm a little wary of some of the things David has put out because I've heard him speak and read his papers and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
There's some conclusion jumping going on there about technology, but I think Dan is very straightforward. And, you know, people like that do tend to attract stuff from other people who want to get it out but don't know how to do it. You know, and George doesn't show too many videos on the radio program, do you, George?
No, but we may have something that you're going to like in a few weeks, Stanton, and I'll keep you abreast of that.
Okay, sounds exciting. It would be interesting to see what's coming up. And again, I go back to the Chicago Tribune article. May very well have opened some doors, getting major media to pay more attention to this subject when they realize how interested people are. And, you know, numbers talk. When you get a million hits on a front page article on the Chicago Tribune website, that tells you something more than
exactly.
Any other story.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're on with Stan Friedman. Hi there.
Hi, you guys. This is Keith in Sedona, Arizona.
Hey, Keith, go ahead, sir.
I was talking to a skeptic once, and so I told him I met an alien, and he told me he didn't believe in you. Anyway, a little joke. Okay, my question for you, Stan, is I'm wondering if you were aware of a whole series of bizarre events that were taking place in Sedona in the early 90s, the most spectacular of which was a military jet chasing a glowing orb at low altitude right over the city, broad daylight. And I saw it. I think it got in the local papers. And there's been some books about it. There was all kinds of strange things happening, creatures and stuff. I saw a lot of it.
Well, I've been to Sedona. I'd heard that it was a center for strange stuff, but nobody told me how beautiful the place is.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous. I've heard that a lot of strange things went on there, and I don't know what to make of them because strange things are going on all over the world, but there is certainly a spectacular setting. I don't work for the Chamber of Commerce, but I'll tell you, you want to see someplace beautiful. I'm going to be speaking, up at the Grand Canyon in October. There's a list of my engagements coming up, including from New York City to the Grand Canyon. How's that for a switch? But maybe we'll hear more from local people. This is a conference in October. And we'll find out more about what's happening. Because we know that most interesting things going on about UFOs don't make it into the news. If we were collecting more of that stuff, then we'd have a much better picture. You know, if the major media, if AP had a UFO reporter, or if a major newspaper put in articles saying we'd like to hear from all former military people, for example, who have been involved in chasing, monitoring, observing UFOs, they'd be flooded with reports. And so that hasn't happened yet. In other words, that somebody's making that effort. But I've done it on a radio program in Seattle. A woman said, how come there aren't any sightings around here? I said, well, you tell people to call and don't ask for their names and you'll get a lot. We were flooded with calls. She was dumbfounded. She thought, nobody sees these things, do they? Yes, they do.
East of the Rockies, you're on with Stanton Friedman. Hi there.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Yes.
Morning. Hi. I was curious if you've heard of anything, of any sightings over Omaha, Nebraska, in fact.
Well, I'll guarantee you there have been sightings there. I've spoken in Omaha, and I got my usual 10% of the audience having seen something. So, yeah, of course there have been sightings there.
Okay, so they've been discussing fleets, in fact, of... I saw this twice, in fact. Fleets of approximately 7 to 10 ships. Good estimate would be these are like the cigar shape ships, approximately a mile in length, and I'd say a third to a quarter of a mile in diameter, running from actually from east to west, and this has always been in the evening. Right around sundown, in fact.
Maybe they're sending a message to the Strategic Air Command. Isn't that still based out that way?
Yes, sir, it is. SAC headquarters and all that good stuff.
Yeah, I think that, again, this is an example of where if there were a central mutual UFO network does a good job of collecting, you know, reports, but if the media put out a... you know, all points bulletin, we'd like to hear from everybody, and you put some people with some time and money into collecting these reports, you'd be amazed at what comes through. I mean, Peter Davenport up in Seattle gets thousands of reports a year because he's got a number out there that people can use. But unless we lift the laughter curtain and let the media... I mean, I once did a survey in a classroom. 80% thought most people didn't believe in UFOs. I had them vote with their eyes closed, incidentally.
Right.
But 80% of that group did believe in UFOs. So there's a disconnect here.
Yeah, because there's absolutely no mention in any of the papers around here, any of the news stations and whatnot. There's no mention whatsoever of any of this.
I'm not surprised, and you'll find that in other parts of the country, the same thing. And as long as the lid's kept on, and, you know, I hear all this stuff about afraid of panic. You had a right to panic if you were living in New Jersey in 38 when the Orson Welles broadcast was on.
Because
what could we do against Martians? I don't think the public would panic. We're accustomed to the space age today. You know, and they haven't destroyed a city here or there. As far as I know, they haven't. George, anybody told you about their city being destroyed?
Not yet.
I have one other thing here. A gentleman called a little earlier about something he's seen on a NASA broadcast.
Yes.
Now, there's a documentary coming out of Canada that I've seen recently. It's called NASA Secret Transmissions.
Mm-hmm.
And... this is actually quite a bit of footage, NASA footage, CNN footage, Russian footage, you know, from Mir, the shuttles, the space station, all different kinds of ships and whatnot. Everybody's out there. I mean, it's thick as flies out there, man.
It's one of the areas. If the government would come clean, we'd find a lot more of this stuff now that everybody's got their own cameras and is monitoring their tubes and so forth. It's really crazy with our modern world that this stuff has fallen through the cracks, so to speak. You know, I've only had 11 hecklers in over 700 lectures, and I come on very, very strong.
And how do they mean hecklers?
So
what do they
say? It's safe to talk about this subject if you have your facts in hand. And, you know, two of those 11 were drunk, incidentally.
When the other nine, when they heckle you, what are they? Are they just skeptics, non-believers?
Well, yeah, they're that. Sometimes they will try to interrupt, and they're usually the audience takes care of them. You know, we came here to hear Mr. Friedman. If you could have seen the look on the guy's face when the woman in the audience said that to him, he thought everybody was with him, giving me a hard time. And or I had one professor stand up. I didn't know he was a professor at the end of my lecture. And he says, I've never heard so much nonsense in one night in my life. And fortunately, I said, can you be a little more specific than that? And he went on, you said that, and every you said that was wrong, was false. And finally, somebody on the other side of the hall said, how about taking some sensible questions? Well, this guy gets up and leaves, and I say, I'll take your question, but who was that? He was a professor of physics. He didn't hear what I said at all. I mean, for example, he said, I said that Betty and Barney Hill were taken to Zeta Reticuli 39 light years away and back. In 2 hours. I didn't say that. I said they were on board for 2 hours, which is a very different thing, obviously.
Sure. Hey, Stan, we got a minute left. I want you to get your website out and your address one more time. Go ahead, sir.
Okay. Website is www.stantonfriedman.com. The post office box address is Post Office Box 958, Houlton, Houlton, Maine, M-E, 04730-0958. The radio special is $35. That includes both my books and a CD-ROM, UFOs, The Real Story. That includes shipping by priority mail, too, incidentally. And there's a list on my website of other things that are available, and even DVDs. We're going modern. And papers dealing with individual subjects like flying saucers and physics and stuff like that. And I'd sure like to hear from people who know about planes that have been disappeared or, you know, military kind of related stuff, because that's where some of the gold is on this subject.
Stay in touch, Mr. Friedman.
Will do. Thanks, George.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Stanton Friedman, always a pleasure to have him on Coast to Coast. We'll be back now. We've got full moon open lines. Plus, I'm going to open up the doppelganger hotline. That's 818-817-0021 if you have seen your doppelganger. I'm George Norrie.
And so am I.
I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.